you know, this is going to be the longest coastal waymark trail in the world. It's going to be, you know, 2,600 plus miles of coast, and then you can join and do the 800 odd miles of the Wales Coast Path as well. It's a, so let's start with that. That is just such an amazing piece of legislation that we've got, that we're creating the England Post Path. And so, and yes, not that many people are going to walk the whole thing, but it means that that whole, we know the coast of England and the coast of Wales are all accessible, and also having the right to roam along that coastal strip is going to open up all kinds of fantastic opportunities.
Welcome to the Distance Hiker Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew, and it is, as always, a pleasure to have you on the show. If you're new here, welcome, and I hope this is a good introductory episode for you. I hope you enjoy what you hear, and if you are a seasoned listener, then again, welcome back. It's great to have you back with us again, listening to another episode. I love hearing from my listeners, so if you ever want to say hello, just drop me an email at matthew@distancehiker.com. And if you really enjoy the episode, then reviews and ratings on Apple and Spotify are always welcome. So, I have got some exciting news for you for today. However, I'm not actually going to share much with you at this point. I just want to tease you with this exciting news. So, in the next few weeks, the show is going to remain the same, mostly, but the brand of Distance Hiker is going to change. I'm not announcing anything at this point. I'm just working quite hard behind the scenes to make these changes. However, what I can tell you is this. I'm going to focus all my attention on storytelling over anything else. I'm really excited by the future direction of the brand and just really want to tell you right now, but I can't, because I just want to do a big reveal a bit closer to the time and do a proper launch of this. So in a couple of weeks' time, the new brand direction will be launched. Distance Hiker as a name will change to something different. And yeah, I'm really, really keen to kind of share this with you. If you want to get involved and want to find out a bit more, you can actually send me an email and I will tell you, as you can get involved. Any existing member, listener to the show, in fact, anybody who hikes trails can get involved straight away. So if you want to find out more, just drop me an email and I'll tell you how you can get involved. So on to today's episode, where I am joined by Julian Gray. Julian Gray is the Vice Chair of the World Trails Network, which you will learn more about in the episode, the Director of the Southwest Coast Path Association, and the Chair of the National Trails UK. He is a busy man, and I feel like I need a holiday just thinking about the level of complexity and involvement of these roles. So it was a pleasure having Julian on the show, and a real opportunity for me to broaden my knowledge of what goes on behind the scenes of preserving and developing these outdoor spaces where we walk, connect, and grow. In the episode, we explore Julian's background and how you can go about making a career from trails. But more importantly, we go into discovering the complex dynamics of managing, protecting, and promoting our world-recognized trails. We also learn about the World Trails Network and the Trails Film Festival. This is a value-packed episode with a ton of depth of knowledge. And if you're like me and you really enjoy going under the bonnet on particular subjects, you will enjoy this one. There will certainly be things you didn't know, new things you'll learn, and hopefully there'll be some surprises along the way in terms of how much involvement there is behind the scenes to make our trails as incredible as they are. It was great to have Julian on the show, and I really enjoyed his clear and honest communication around a multitude of topics, and I think you'll really enjoy listening. So, without further ado, I introduce you to episode 33 of the Distance Hiker Podcast with Julian Gray. Julian, it's really great to have you on the show today. Before we get into the thick of it, I would love to just hear a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of where your interest in long distance hiking began.
Okay. Well, first of all, Matthew, thanks for inviting me on. It's always a pleasure to kind of be able to talk about trails, and podcasts are a great way of getting across to a wide range of audiences. So in terms of kind of my engagement with specifically long distance trails, I suppose it started kind of early on in my career. When I first started working, I was an interpretive ranger. My job was to go out there and to engage people with nature, and was involved in things like the first community forest, Thames Chase Community Forest, getting people out of southeast London and into green space. And what I found really interesting is, well, 30 years later, those issues are still just as important as they were then, if not even more so post-COVID, or as we move away from COVID. When I was working as a ranger, I got involved in a number of trails and trail networks. There was a program called Ways Through Essex. And that kind of got me interested in trails and how they connect people to place. And I've always been a walker myself. I was brought up in North Pennines and, you know, really loved kind of walking around kind of Ark and Garthdale and Gunnerside Gill and all that kind of area. So it's something which is kind of almost in my DNA. So by working in a space where I was able to then utilize trails as a way of getting people connecting to nature just seemed to me like a perfect thing to do. So that's kind of where my work started. I then moved to the South Downs and we had the South Downs Way National Trail. So I then got into the world of national trails. And with that, we started talking and engaging with other regional trails and other national trails like the North Downs Way and other trails connecting in the southeast, and tried to really work out how we could better leverage those public benefits that trails give, and also start to think about equity of access as well. Because it was clear that the trails are being used by a specific demographic, and there's a lot of people who weren't using trails, and why was that? And so we started then working across all of the national trails, trying to improve kind of comms around national trails and what they are and what their benefits are. My career has then gone off into all kinds of different directions and around the world and all kinds of stuff, but it's come back to trails and it's brilliant. And so I'm kind of now working, heading up the Southwest Coast Path Association, and there we're managing, well, at the moment it's England's longest national trail. The England Coast Path will soon overtake that, but we'll be managing the England Coast Path in the Southwest anyway. And so it's just really exciting kind of getting into the world of trails, sort of seeing what those benefits are.
I've got a question about benefits, if I may interrupt you. Yeah. So I think a lot of us are aware of the benefits of walking in particular, but are there sort of any, I guess, unobvious benefits of long distance trails, whether that's economical or personal, that you can kind of think of?
Well, it's something that we need to better articulate what those public benefits of trails are. And there's also something which is very specific to long distance walking. But if we just talk about, you know, big trails have good brands. They're kind of things that people can connect to and that people kind of, you know, want to do and to be able to get involved with. So if you look at the Southwest Coast Path as a specific, you know, as a trail, you know, we're 630 miles long. It's almost, you know, from, if you walk the whole route, it's almost sea level to Everest times by four. So not an insignificant kind of challenge to get on and do. But we get about 9 million people a year using the trail. And that's huge. But that's because they're coming down to Devon, Cornwall, Somerset, Dorset, and they're all going to the beach and to the coast. So they're all kind of, it just means there's a lot of people who are engaging in a trail, not necessarily sometimes even knowing they're on a national trail. They're just going for a walk along the coast. They're going on the coast path, whatever that is. So we've been doing economic research looking for the past kind of 10 years or so at the public benefits to, first of all, the visitor economy. And the Southwest Coast Path accounts for about 5% of the visitor economy of the Southwest. So that's about £520 million a year being driven by the Southwest Coast Path and promotion of the Southwest Coast Path. So that supports about 10,000 jobs. So it's not an insignificant thing. So it's not just about the trail, it's about all those businesses who are part of the trail, to all the kind of the B&Bs, the pubs, the restaurants, the cafes, etc., who rely on the trail and the people who use the trail to be able to access that. So that's one public benefit, and supporting the local economy. Another public benefit is the health benefit. And you can almost split it into two, like the physical health benefit and then the mental kind of well-being benefit. And the physical health benefit we've estimated is about £75 million a year using the World Health Organization HEAT model. And that basically is saying people are living longer and they're having better lives because they're out walking. Okay. So therefore they're
healthier. That's a significant amount of money to be calculated in terms of the health benefits.
Yeah.
And how's that calculated? Is that calculated as a sort of local health benefit or a national health benefit in terms of the cost?
In terms of the cost, it's based on a kind of an economic model that looks at the number of people who are using the trail and how much they're walking and what is the physical health benefits of that amount of walking. And it's also there are sort of calculations you have to do as to if you took the trail away totally, how much value would there be? Because people will offset and walk in other places rather than walk up the coast path. But we use the World Health Organization HEAT model, and we also use the University of East Anglia's Qualys model as well. So we've got two separate kind of models which come up with those kind of figures.
Interesting.
And we've got research reports. So if anyone's interested, just go onto our website, southwestcoastpath.org.uk. We've got, you know, proper quality research reports with the University of Exeter, funded by Natural England, who giving all that kind of data. And it's really important to have sound data when we're managing trails so that we can kind of articulate why we need funding to be able to maintain, manage, you know, promote and enhance them. So that's the kind of physical benefits. And then you look at the mental well-being benefits, and these are really interesting because they're things that we know intrinsically. It's nice to go out for a walk, but that, you know, politicians don't want to hear about nice. They want to hear about numbers, and they want to hear, you know, they want actual hard things. So we've done an initial piece of work with, again, with the University of Exeter. It's just like a 60-page report looking at the mental health benefits, and it's really interesting because there are benefits of being in green space. There are benefits of being by water, and there are benefits of being physically active. So the physically active, I think we know the ones where, you know, runners and getting all those kind of endorphins and those kind of mental, you know, the well-being kind of, oh, I'm feeling great because I'm running. But those other two, there are kind of, as well as the kind of the hedonic, you know, benefits, so these eudonic benefits as well, which help you feel connected to a place, which are far more difficult to quantify, but actually when you start to add in that kind of being next to green space, being by water, being active, walking on a coast path, it's like a super vitamin. It just like it delivers all three at once, which is fantastic. So that's why we love walking on the coast path.
And I'd say the belonging to a place also probably meets that need for community as well that is so absent in many of our lives. So sort of being able to walk along a coast path or whichever path and kind of integrate within the communities along the way is not both healthy for the people doing it, but also healthy for the communities whose communities are bolstered economically and with people while, you know, they're enjoying those trails. That's definitely one of the highlights in my experience from being in any sort of along any national trail or any trail real globally, I suppose.
Yeah.
So there's what I did pick up, because I've done a lot of reading in the last couple of days, sort of particularly on your Twitter and obviously on the National Trails website on Southwest Coast Path Association to try and get a bit more of an understanding about this. One of the things that keeps on coming up, rightly so, is climate change. And the trails seem to be obviously affected by climate change. But I'm kind of just wondering if there's any benefits that maybe unnoticed where the trail can kind of play have a part to play in aiding climate change or creating awareness of climate change. Kind of what challenges and successes have trails had around climate change?
So I mean, it's a really interesting question, and if you go back to the kind of the history of trails and the history of like protected landscapes and national parks and like, especially if you look to the like the American national parks and the trails there, where, you know, a fence is drawn around a protected area, and it's like, people are kind of moved away from that space, and that's now protected. And a trail is seen as something which is potentially damaging to that threatened landscape. That mode of thinking is really being turned on its head, and actually, we're saying no. The trails have been there, and the people living in those landscapes have been there for many, many thousands of years. They might not have been labelled as national trails, but the trails were being used to get from point A to point B for trade, for communities and all those kind of things. So the trails should be used to drive things like biodiversity, net gain, reforestation, and those positive kind of actions, rather than being seen as a threat to those protected landscapes. Because the more we can engage people in those issues, and what's a better way of engaging someone in an issue in going out and walking along a trail and seeing damage to a place, or going walking on a trail and then maybe doing some volunteering and doing some reforestation as you're along the trail. And so trail organisations are switching on to that, and they're starting to develop programmes where we engage people much more on those trails and think of the trail not as a 1 metre wide line, but as a corridor, as a broad area where you can do some interesting things. So if you think of the Southwest Coast Path, doesn't matter what direction a storm's going to come in, it's going to hit us. Because of the geography of where we are, so we're almost like the canary in the coal mine. We're seeing more frequent storms. We're seeing more energy in storms, so they're stronger and having more impact. And it's not just coastal erosion; it's things like we had three storms in February this year. One of those was incredibly high wind, so it knocked out a whole load of woodlands up over in Exmoor. So we're getting impacted by climate change in lots of different ways rather than just coastal erosion. But coastal erosion is the big obvious one for us. It's very, very visible. You see the big cliff falls. You can see the impact. And we're seeing the costs of having to manage the trails going up and up and up because we're having to manage more and more retreat from places because of that coastal erosion. But it's also we're having stronger rainfall events, and therefore we're getting more surface erosion. So it's a complicated picture. And then if you think of the landscapes and the habitats that the trails are going through, then especially on a coastal trail, you've got an incredibly fragile habitat which hasn't got time to shift. So if you think in evolutionary terms, when there have been issues previously, you can just species shift places and they move and they adapt. But here we've got a hard kind of like line of development or roads and other sort of things at tops of cliffs, and you've got sea level rising. Okay, it's only 20 centimeters so far, we've got another 50 centimeters already baked in. So this is an incredibly fragile set of habitats along that coastal area. So one of the things we're really looking forward to is in the creation of the England Coast Path, there's new legislation that kind of helps us create what's called a coastal margin. And that coastal margin is basically all the land between the National Trail or the England Coast Path and low water. And that will be seen and designated as coastal margin and will be given open access status in the same way as you have right to roam on Moor, Heath and Downland, which is fantastic. So we're now looking and saying, well, why don't we call this a coastal wild belt? And instead of just looking at access, look at it for nature as well. And that's because we know if we can get more people out and connected into those spaces, and we can also target biodiversity, net gain kind of programs and environmental land management schemes and the like, then that will mean that we can also connect people to nature and also make them understand why those bits of nature are really important and protect nature at the same time. So it's better for people and for the planet.
That intersects really well into my next question. So you mentioned that the sort of brand of National Trails and the love of National Trails enables people to come on board and get involved in a way which helps to develop through volunteer work, develop and maintain the National Trails. Have you got any examples of kind of situations where people have come in to the Southwest Coast Path, for instance, and say a community group they might have or a school group? Have you got any examples of anyone who's come along and actually benefited from being involved within the trails and that kind of on the ground level?
Yeah. So for about the past 5 years, we've been running a program, and it was linked into a program which was being run across Devon with Sport England called Connecting Actively with Nature. And through that, we ran a series of pilot projects where we tried to find communities who weren't accessing the trail and tried to find out why they weren't, and then tried to break down those barriers. And we were targeting people who were quite often had health issues, had transport issues, and we were looking for problems so we could find the solutions to those problems. And to do that, we worked with a whole range of different organizations. So we work with like Help the Aged, Devon and Cornwall Refugee Service, Improving Lives Plymouth, number of different organizations. And we would just run a series of programs where we would start to handhold people and give them confidence about what the opportunities were and what they needed and what they didn't need. So you didn't need to kind of dress yourself up in Gore-Tex and do all that kind of stuff. You can go out from your local community. And these are coastal communities, and the coastal communities where people weren't going to the coast, which just seemed to be quite bizarre. So we were connecting with those communities, building their capacity, and then building the capacity within those groups to try and find people who would then continue with those groups. So once we've done our initial intervention, those groups would then be self-reliant and they would have the capacity to be able to continue and to continue going out walking. And it's worked really well. We've seen those programs over the past 5 years. We've tried a whole range of different interventions in different places. And my guess would be is over 50% of those groups are still running 5 years later, which is fantastic.
Wow. That's amazing. That's a really amazing outcome from that incentive. And it kind of just goes to show the kind of power of something so simple, which is a coastal path, in terms of engaging communities. I think nature and being outdoors always has a way to very quickly turn people who may have not really seen it as something that be kind of for them as suddenly something they really want to engage with them, you know, more and more and more. It's so easy to see the benefits. So I'm aware that, and I think I'm in that kind of unique position because I'm sort of involved in this a bit more deeply than some, but I'm aware that running charities and organizations that work with or work for and with the people who are walking trails and with the communities, etc., like the Southwest Coast Path Association, is a complex organization to run. There's a lot of moving parts. How complex is it? Because for most people, it's about walking national trails and long distance paths, you know, visiting some pubs along the way, putting one foot in front of the other. But behind the scenes, away from the B&Bs and the small businesses that operate on the trail, there is a large group, or probably not a large group, but a group of dedicated individuals like yourself who make sure that the trails remain open, the upkeep is done. How difficult is it? What's kind of involved? I know that's a very open-ended question, but just yeah, to get an idea for somebody listening.
I mean, the first thing is there are many, many different organizations and people and groups who are involved in like the trails like the Southwest Coast Path. So we see our role as a kind of like a coordinator and an enabler rather than it's our trail, it's everyone's trail. And one of the things I really enjoy doing is going for meetings where our volunteers meet with, say, the National Trust Rangers and meeting with the local authority highways, you know, access wardens. And everyone is, everyone's working together and there is joint ownership of what we're doing. So, and then I talk to business leaders and they just want to work with us because they see the benefit. One of the benefits of businesses, say, in the Southwest is their location and the fact that they are in this place, which has got these amazing national parks and areas of outstanding natural beauty and the coast path. So there's a real strong kind of connection to the trail. In terms of as a charity, it's interesting because it's our 50th anniversary next year, which is brilliant, and it's all about volunteerism. It's about volunteers, and it was volunteers who set the charity up 50 years ago to create the trail and to, you know, connect those bits, because there've always been kind of trails along the coast, but it was actually connecting all the bits together and making sure it was one contiguous trail. So they did that, and it took them 5 years of kind of working with highways authorities and government to actually create the national trail and get it designated. But since then, they've been going out and improving the route and trying to, you know, champion the trail. Now, when they first started, they were very much a group of long distance walkers who were just absolutely passionate about the trail. Now, if you look at what the charity is, and we've got about 10,000 members, we are a health and well-being charity. It's about the journey people take along the trail. And I think what COVID has done is it's shone a spotlight on a couple of things. where historically people have looked at trails as things where you go off to find yourself and you go off on your own and it's a singular activity. Well, during COVID, one of the few things you could do which was social and where you could meet people and be safe. So the second thing, which is quite interesting, which is when you're walking side by side with somebody and have your conversation, you can sometimes have conversations that you just can't have when you're facing someone. And that's a fascinating process. So if you want to nut out a problem, go for a walk with someone and you can solve it, because you're able to think and walk and talk. And then the third element, which is specific to the long distance walker, is once you start walking over a certain period of time, and probably after about 3 days, you get into a pattern. And that pattern is almost meditative in the pattern. And pilgrims routes and other things have known about this for many, many millennia. And it's fascinating. And that's the thing, that long distance trail walking can be transformative in a way that just going for a short day walk, which is fantastic and brilliant and is wonderful, but it's just, there's a different quantum to when you start doing that, you know, major journey, which is why people do the Camino, because they're trying to achieve something, run away from something, or find something. You know, it's that journey that they're taking, and I find that the thinking around that fascinating. And so what we're trying to do when we're managing trails is think about all those different users, the people who are popping down to the beach for the day or going for their daily dog walk along the trail, versus those people who want to do the full, as the Americans would say, you know, the through hike. And all those different groups have different needs and different expectations. So what we do is we're part of a much broader network called the World Trails Network, which is made up of trail managers around the world and trail organizations around the world. And we share information, knowledge, and understanding amongst each other. And what I love is meeting other trail managers. It doesn't matter what budget they've got or how long their trail is. There's always something you can learn from how somebody else is managing a trail, and they can always give you an insight into how you're managing your trail too. So it's a fascinating process.
Distance Hiker Trail Prints are beautifully designed pieces of trail-inspired artwork created to be proudly displayed in your home. We are developing two distinct styles of prints, from our black and white map-based print to a more colourful minimalist route outline, and have big plans to bring you a vast collection of long-distance hiking-inspired artwork over the next year. This very much is my focus alongside the podcast. Better still, we are donating 5% off the sale of each print back to the trail associated with the print. So, if you buy a coast-to-coast trail print, 5% of that sale amount goes back to the maintenance of that trail, so straight to that trail association or the national trails or whichever body manages the trails and accepts donations. 5% will go back to that. So your print is making a direct impact to the maintenance of the long distance trails, preserving them for hikers following in your footsteps and future generations to come. We are adding new designs each week, and if you don't find the trail prints you want, just reach out to me and I will get one made up for you at no extra charge. Visit distancehiker.com/shop to choose your trail print today, and as a regular listener of the podcast, simply enter podcast into the discount code box at checkout to get 20% when you purchase 2 trail prints in one transaction. That's podcast to get 20% for 2 purchased trail prints, and of course free postage is available on all orders. Thank you for listening. Now back to the show. Excellent interlude into my question on the World Trails Network. I was going to throw this at you a bit later, but I've only recently come across World Trails Network. And I think it was Hiker Owen from Hiker, Owen Hamilton from Hiker, who spoke there. He shared something on Hiker or on his personal account about it. And I went, oh, what's World Trails Network? That was until the conference, which happened in August, or was it earlier than that? It was September, yeah. Can you share a bit about World Trails Network and what it is exactly? Because I think most walkers probably haven't got a clue, because it's not got a, especially locally, it's not something that people tend to know about because it has a
It's very much not a public facing kind of organization. It's an organization which helps trail organizations network, and so it is all about the networking, and the conference is the place where the networking happens, and the conference happens every 2 years. I mean, there's other things that happen. There are task teams that look at specific issues and kind of policy papers written and kind of feeding into kind of global programs. So it's championing things like World Trails Day, which is first Saturday in June. And we're trying to make that a UN UNESCO day as well, so that it'll actually be a formal day. So the network originated out of a trail organization in South Korea, the Jeju Ole Foundation, and they kind of set up an Asia Trails network to share knowledge and understanding across all the kind of like the different trail organizations in Asia. And they got some funding to be able to set up a World Trails Network. This is about 12 years ago. And basically a number of conferences have happened every 2 years since, apart from 2020. It's fascinating because there are so many different, there's so many different continents, never mind countries, who are involved. And it's also fascinating to see how trails are used as vehicles for different things in different places. So there's programs for peace trails. There's programs for trails. There's a fantastic example over in Japan, the Michinoko Coastal Trail, which is a trail that goes from Fukushima kind of like along that coastline that was absolutely hammered by the tsunami. And that trail is there to rebuild or reconnect communities along that that coastline. And what's fascinating is, although it's supposed to be there for kind of economic development and community development across the coastline, it's now also people who were grieved in that tsunami are then using the trail as a way of them getting processing that as well. So it opens up a whole different world of different people using trails in different ways and how powerful they can be, again, in that transformative process.
Interesting. And what's your exact involvement? Did you
vice say, chair.
If I read correctly, the chair of World Trails Network? The vice chair. Oh, amazing. Okay. And there's also, I'm aware of the film festival, isn't there?
Trails so film. Trails Film first kicked off in Santiago back in 2018. And it was a way of trying to engage the public in some of the things that that was being discussed, by the trail organisations, and it worked really well in Santiago. I mean, that's an amazing trail place because it's where everyone's coming in from the Camino, and everyone's totally immersed in the world of trails.
Of course,
having just done that kind of process. We then had the second festival over in the Skiathos conference, and it will be going on world tour as well, so we're going to get a mini version over here at some stage. We've got about 36 hours worth of trail films in the festival this year, it's a real range. So some of them are real kind of incredible shorts, like 4 minutes, but really impactful kind of shorts going through to full-length feature films. Most of them have a documentary kind of feel to them, but there are some quite artistic films as well. And again, they're from all over the world. And the one thing that the trail films do is that they are inspirational. There are some amazing human stories. Like there's one film about a guy who's been walking in China for 7 years. And every day he takes a photo of the night sky that he's sleeping under. And the narration of his words of why he's walking and what he's doing is poetry. It is just so beautifully written. You've got other films, like there's a film from the Lebanon Mountain Trail about someone trying to do the fastest known time along that trail. But the filmmaker, when they started filming, the filmmaker realized there was a backstory, and as they kind of unraveled the backstory, it turns out this person had an addiction, and they use trail running as a way of transferring it from a negative addiction into a positive addiction. And so they were addicted to trail running, which is fantastic. You know, it's a great thing to be addicted to. So each of these films just opens up a different kind of aspect of the world of trails. And it's a fascinating medium to engage people in it.
That sounds really exciting. I mean, I've only seen the website and the trailer so far. And when I saw the trailer, I thought, I need to be at this film festival. I need to somehow see it. So, and I shared it on my community, and I had quite a few comments, people going, oh, you know, would love to, when is this going to be out and things. Obviously, I don't know the answer to that. So when is that festival hopefully convening,
or locations? I'm working at the moment with the organisers in the States, and we're trying to get something happening early in the new year. And that will probably be down probably in Plymouth, just because that's where our headquarters are for the Southwest Coast. So it makes life a bit easy for us, but it's just finding venues and the like. But it is, if other people are interested in hosting, then get in touch with me, because it is going on world tour. It's just been shown over in Taiwan at the Asia Trails Network conference, which happened about 2 weeks ago.
Amazing. Cool. Well, hopefully it goes further afield than Plymouth, because that would be really, really good to see it. It's a bit too far for me, but I'd love to see it. So on to the National Trails Charity. Now, I am aware that some time ago, the National Trails, and this is just for my clarification and understanding, was run by an organisation called Walk Unlimited, if I'm correct. Correct me if I am wrong, or another organisation. It is now change to the National Trails Charity as the charity who runs it. What has changed recently for the National Trails to kind of fall under a new management essentially? And similar to the Southwest Coast Path Association, I need to learn the acronym for that. How does it work essentially for people, again, people like me who just walk them and get on with it? How does it work in terms of managing not one National Trail, which already falls under the Southwest Coast Path Association, but also the rest of them?
The late 1940s, when we had the National Parks and Access to the Countryside Act, where the long distance paths and the national parks and the conservation areas, which turned into the areas of outstanding natural beauty, were all designated. Or the act to designate them was created. And really, that was 2 years after the 47 Act, which created the National Health Service. So we're in post-war space, lots of people needing to be able to recover from a very difficult period. And this idea of a natural health service came up. And so that's where the National Trails really were born, in that concept of getting people to and through our finest landscapes. And to be quite honest, 70 odd years later, that is still just as relevant today as it was then.
Yeah, that's super interesting that even back then it was called a natural health service, because you feel like that's something new that's thrown about these days as a term.
Terms of the National Trails, the purpose of them are to be these long distance trails which connect people to nature and get people through our finest landscapes. They are a government designation. So in terms of ownership, then it is Natural England, Natural Resources Wales, and NatScot. There are 20 national trails across England, Scotland, and Wales. Although in Scotland, the national trails are better known as the Great Trail. So four of the Great Trails are national trails, are designated as. What Walk Unlimited do is they were given a contract to manage the website of National Trails and also to promote the National Trails brand. And that worked for a while, but it proved to be a much bigger job than I think they could continue with. And the trails wanted to do more, the trails wanted to utilize the National Trail brand better and work together better in terms of communicating those brand values of the trails, and also what the opportunities were of getting out to the trails. So for the past probably 4 or 5 years, the Trails Partnerships in England, who manage the national trails, and the National Trails in Wales have been working together, trying to work out how we can get a stronger voice for the trails. Because we've always felt a bit like the Cinderella of the protected landscapes family. You know, national parks are up there and everyone knows what they are. Areas of outstanding natural beauty have kind of awareness has been raised of what they are, although they're now turning into national landscapes. And then we've got the national trails where people probably know, you know, the South Downs Way, the North Downs Way, the Pedders Way, the Pennines Way, Offersdyke. They know the names of the individual trails probably far more than they know the national trail designation per se. So, and that's right, because it's about place. So all the national trail designation does is it says this trail is of the top quality standard, and it's got to meet those standards that we expect from a national trail, and they're experiential standards. They're not just physical standards. It's about what the quality of the experience of walking on the trail is. So what we as a group of trails have done is over the past kind of 3 or 4 years built up we've been working together more and better, and we really wanted to have a way of being able to give a strong independent voice to the trails family, to be able to talk about what the trails can deliver, but also to engage with government to say, hey, you need to, you know, if this is delivering all these other things above and beyond getting people walking on the trail, and it's delivering public health benefits, it's delivering environmental benefits, it's delivering benefits to the local economy, then we need those bits of government to also to come in and help support the investment in the trails. You know, so I mentioned earlier about, you know, £520 million coming into the visitor economy. Well, think of that VAT receipts, that's £100 million going back into the Treasury's coffers. Yet we're only getting £500k from government a year to manage, you know, 1,000 kilometres of trail. So it's there's a disparagence between how much has been invested and how much we might want to, or what the public benefits that we're getting out of them. And we know if we get more investment, we can get much bigger public benefits, especially in terms of equity of access. So to us, as a family of trails, what we're trying to do is give ourselves a stronger voice, which is why we've created the new charity, National Trails UK. We're just appointing a team. And so in the new year, you'll see more. At the moment, we're on Twitter, if Twitter lasts out between now and the new year, then we will move also into new platforms, and you will hear more about us, and we'll be trying to be more public facing, and we also will be looking at the National Trails website, which at the moment is now being managed by Natural England, but we've already started conversations about, you know, what are the opportunities for us to be able to leverage that kind of that resource, and there's good reason as well. So if you look at the numbers of people using the National Trails website at the moment are only the same as the numbers of people who are using the Southwest Coast Path Association's website. So that's we need to amplify very much and be able to get more people using those resources so that they can, you know, be able to get the benefits of the trails.
Okay, that's really interesting. That was super interesting, especially because I have seen the development of this over the years. And I kind of got a bit lost with it all. So it's really good to know. What will then the national, or what is your vision in terms of being at the helm of this and getting the National Trails to amplify the brand? What ideas have you got, and what's kind of going to happen? Is it going to be more of a stronger presence across social media, trying to reach a wider demographic? What kind of ideas are in the pipeline?
It's interesting. And it's interesting for a couple of points, because there already are lots of groups, and, you know, for individual trails, there are supporter groups, and there already are things like the Long Distance Walkers Association. So what we're not going to do is try and duplicate anything that those groups are doing, because they're all doing a fantastic job, and we should be supporting those groups in the jobs that they're doing. What we're trying to do is to get the national voice and to get national support. So part of that is going to be policy and advocacy and working with government, persuading government to, you know, make sure the legislative framework for trails means that public bodies have to give better due regard to the trails and the trail corridors, defining what a trail corridor is, getting public policy to fund environmental kind of growth in those trail corridors as well. So it's that kind of work, but at the same time also looking at working with the tourism, the destination marketing organizations, and trying to promote the trails in a sustainable way. And there's so many fantastic examples across the trails network. I mean, I've talked about Southwest Coast Path because I've got the Southwest Coast Path t-shirt on today. So, but the whole trails network across the UK, and not just the national trails, but also the regional trails that connect between the national trails as well. It's not just a simple network, it's a far more complicated network. And then the broader, 250,000 odd kilometres of public rights of way network, which connects us all together. It's such a brilliant resource. We need to be able to be shouty about it. And we need to, I think, the lockdowns that we had meant that people rediscovered getting out into their local environment, or made people aware of how locked away from green space they were and how they needed to be able to get to green space. So our job is to help break down those barriers and show opportunities and make sure that the trails themselves are welcoming, they're accessible, and they deliver those fantastic experiences that you and me know that you get on the trails.
Amazing. And two more questions from me. And I think this is a bit of a cheeky question. For anybody who's listening to this who likes wild camping, why can you not wild camp on national trails? And is there a scope in the future to allow people to wild camp along long distance trails in particular? Or is that something you can wild camp in
some areas? Yeah.
Yeah, in Scotland and Dartmoor.
And I mean, what we say is quite often, I mean, if you can imagine trying to find campsites and spaces in the middle of summer in tourism hotspots is difficult, but there are farmers and landowners who are willing to give those spaces and to let you in. So the starting point would be to try and engage, you know, if you know where you're walking, try and see if there are other opportunities. For example, in the Southwest Coast Path, what we're doing, we've got a 5-year plan where we're looking at affordable accommodation along the trail, because single night stays is a real issue for walkers. And so what we've done is we've set up a program called Waymakers. And Waymakers are businesses which are part of the trail. So it includes campsites, include B&Bs and things like that. But Waymaker Friends are businesses who provide affordable accommodation. And normally that's camping, but it's bunkhouse, bothies, youth hostels and those kind of things. And we've started with developing that as a program. We're then looking at abandoned buildings in the landscape and gaps in the network, not for ourselves as the Southwest Coast Path Association to deliver, but for other partners such as the National Trust, Historic Churches Trust, the YHA and others, but building a partnership with those groups to try and identify gaps and to draw together a pilot area. If we can get like a 100-mile stretch where it's then easily walkable and bookable. And to us, that's the icing on the cake. Once we fill the gaps, is to then turn it into one bookable product where you're then able to then book that affordable accommodation along the route. Now, if there's wild camping that can be included in that, then that's also part of the mix. But I think actually just trying to solve the affordability of being able to camp and get around the trail is a starting point. So probably not answering your question quite as directly as you might wish.
And No, that's fine. That's a really interesting answer. I've just been a bit cheeky with that because I wanted to see what you come up with. But I think that the incentive to have affordable accommodation is actually a really interesting one, because obviously people wild camp because it's nice to do. And I also know people camp in that way because actually the other option is totally unaffordable. You know, not everybody can afford to participate in the sport and to afford a B&B or a campsite every night. So wild camping opens it up for anyone really who can, you know, get their hands on a tent and a sleeping bag and a backpack. So that's a really interesting answer.
It's also just it's this is where things like being engaged in the World Trails Network is really interesting, because you talk to colleagues in Norway and like you can wild camp everywhere. you know, and you can walk everywhere. Yeah. And you then talk to other countries where they don't even have a right to way network.
Yeah.
And so there's a real quantum and there are cultural norms things, and it's interesting. Oh, yeah. And I think it's work in progress, and I'm hoping that what comes out of Dartmoor is a positive response on that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've just had a sort of bonus episode with somebody who's been quite prominently involved within the Dartmoor case. So I'm watching that with keen eyes, as I'm sure many people are. So final question for you, Julian. And I've really enjoyed recording this podcast because it's been a bit different to what I usually do. It's been super insightful. And this is a bit of a broad question. As somebody at the helm, and I'd say with your finger in a lot of pies, doing a lot of things, what is your vision, if you have one, for trails and access to trails for the future in the United Kingdom in particular? So if you've got a long-term vision that you particularly see and kind of aim for?
The first thing, England Coast Path. Absolutely brilliant. You know, this is going to be the longest coastal waymark trail in the world. It's going to be, you know, 2,600 plus miles of coast, and then you can join and do the 800 odd miles of the Wales Coast Path as well. So let's start with that. That is just such an amazing piece of legislation that we've got, that we're creating the England Coast Path. And so, and yes, not that many people are going to walk the whole thing, but it means that that whole, we know the coast of England and the coast of Wales are all accessible, and also having the right to roam along that coastal strip is going to open up all kinds of fantastic opportunities. Second one, coast to coast path. You know, probably one of the, you know, after the Southwest Coast Path and the South Downs Way and a couple of others, I would say Hadrian's Wall maybe, you know, the Wainwright Trail is one of the world's best known trails, isn't it? So it has to be a national trail. And the fact that it's been designated in such a way that we're thinking and about the economic and the public health and well-being benefits and all those things right from the start as it's getting designated is going to be really interesting. So it's going to be the first trail that's been designed in that sustainable and holistic way, while all the other trails have had to kind of like grow up into that space. So that's great. And then the other thing that to me, which is just so, so important, we are national trails. We're a national resource. And it's about getting people out and using that amazing resource. And so to me, equity of access is just so, so important, and the national trails need to be champions of that, so that everyone has the same opportunity.
Brilliant. And yeah, definitely agree with that. And answers brief more questions. I've wanted to finish on that, but I need to rewind just a little bit to the coast to coast, and that being a national trail. So is the coast to coast already a designated national trail at this point, or is it going to just not? So what happens in terms of particularly on the ground, the physical transformation of the coast to coast, which is known to have sort of sketchy bits which are not particularly accessible? What actually happens now in terms of getting that to the
so
required quality?
What's happened is the government have announced their intention to designate a national trail. The authorities up there working with Natural England have done an amazing job of kind of like planning and looking at what all the options are, especially trying to cross kind of trunk roads and the like. And there are, as you say, some sketchy areas which need improvements. And so it's the same with the England Coast Path. They started the the Marine and Coastal Act was 2009. They got the first section done in time for the Olympics. That's 2012. We're still only probably 25% of the England Coast Path has actually been designated and opened. The rest of it has still been kind of the lines on the majority of it. The route has been worked out, but it's like putting in all the kind of works, the schedule of works and things to make it accessible. And I don't mean that you can use a wheelchair along. It just means so that there is actually a trail there that you can walk along or cycle along or whatever it is in different places. So the same with same will happen with the coast to coast path, but it's obviously a shorter trail than the England Coast Path. It's not going to take 20 years to work that out. It'll take about 3 years, I'd imagine, to pull together all the plans, of all the works that need to be done, and then get it formally designated.
Brilliant. Thank you for that answer. That's super interesting. I wasn't aware of any of that, so I thought it was going to be imminently opened as a national trail. So, well, Julian, thank you for joining me today. And I just aware you've selflessly sort of talked about national trails and everything but yourself. If people would like to find out more about you personally, whether that's Twitter or LinkedIn, because I know you do post quite frequently.
Probably, well, if Twitter still exists, then on Twitter, which is at Julian Gray Comms, I think. LinkedIn, just Julian Gray. If you just do Julian Gray and World Trails Network or Southwest Coast Path, you'll find me and I'll post on there.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Julian. It's been really nice to speak to you.
Yes. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.